Okay, so here we are. This is the 27th of September, 2017, the final in a deep state crimes teleconference. Yeah, Barbara, that's you making noise in the background there, so kind of watch that, please. We are going to now call the roll. Craig?
Right. I will read what I see on the screen here. We have Ken Freeland, Cheryl Curtis, and myself, Craig McKee, Barbara Honegger, Barry Swicker, Charles Ewing Smith, David Cole, Dick Attlee, Dwayne Dietz, James Hufford, John O'Malley, and I think, hold on, there's a second page. No, I've got everybody. That's all the ones I have. Did I get everybody?
No, there's a second page. On it has Lynn Bradbury, Peter Ketchum, and Wayne Costi on it.
Oh, that's weird. Okay, I just went to the second page and I got the same. Oh, I didn't scroll up. Okay, sorry. Yeah, John O'Malley, Lynn Bradbury, Peter Ketchum, Wayne Costi.
Okay, anybody there that did not hear their name mentioned? Good. Then we will proceed with the approval of the minutes from the previous meeting. Any objections to approving the minutes, with the exception of the addition of, was it Nita Renfrew? Who is it?
Yeah, it's Nita, yeah. Yeah, yeah, she's got to be added in there.
She got squelched from the comments. She didn't even get included. Yeah, wow.
Okay. Yeah.
So if you want to send me a doc form with the revision, I appreciate that. Any other amendments to the minutes?
Yeah.
Okay, hearing none, then the minutes will be approved with that amendment, and we'll move on to tonight's draft agenda. Any comments on the draft agenda before we approve it for tonight's use? Well, then hearing none, we will take it for unanimously approved and proceed to implement it. So our first agenda item tonight, which will take up most of our time, I assume, is a major review of the many things that happened this month commemorating 9/11 and or... Yeah, okay, that's background noise. I look like a barber. Okay, so with no further ado then, we all know Barbara Honegger, who took a little umbrage at my calling her fairy godmother of the 9/11 truth event calendar.
Well, you could have done better. You could have done better.
Okay. Waving her magic wand and making these things happen. Okay, so that's the only sense in which it was meant. And so with no further ado, here's our maven of the 9/11 truth activism, Barbara Honegger, on all these different wonderful events that happened in September. Go ahead, Barb.
Okay, can I be heard all right?
Yeah, I think we should probably... We should probably go into a presentation mode here because there's a fair amount of background noise. So give me a second here.
All right.
I don't. Can you do it, Cheryl? I don't have. I'm not
what do I put? Do I do hold? Is that what I do? What do I do it on? Or muted?
No. Well, if you go to mute, it should give you options for different capacities, and we want to do presentation mode. And then you'll have to unmute Barbara, okay?
I'm sorry, I don't see the presentation mode anywhere,
okay.
So I'm just going to click on...
I'm going to need to get on there, I guess. That's weird. I was on there before, and now I'm not on there anymore.
I think it's okay.
I got it.
If you get background noise, we'll go into presentation mode, okay? So go ahead, Barbara. Let's hope everybody can keep their noise
down.
We're
in
or
presentation.
Star 6 if you're making noise. Star 6 if you're making noise, okay?
We're in presentation mode now, lecture mode.
Yeah. Okay. And Barbara's muted, though. I can unmute her.
I got her unmuted.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
So we're in presentation.
Can you hear me now? Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. This is a good Verizon commercial. Can you hear me now? Okay. All right. So, I attended almost every event there was, in New York City and Washington, D.C., I think all the events, but I'm going to start with the event that I co-produced with Les Jamison. It was arguably the number one 9/11 Truth Movement event in the world this year. I don't know of any big ones in Europe. Maybe during the comment period somebody knows something in London or, you know, Berlin, who knows. But for the United States, the big one was in New York City. And I want to give you a little bit of background. I'm going to tell you about the event. And first off, it was magnificently successful. It was almost like it was scripted in heaven. It went so perfectly. However, the amazing thing was, is I don't know if anybody has ever tried to get a permit for a public event in a public square in New York City, whether it was about four long blocks from Ground Zero, but anywhere in Manhattan or New York City, it is a nightmare. We literally had to make a judgment call because we didn't get the sound permit to amplify sound. And if you're going to have a film event, you've got to amplify the sound outdoors or indoors. We didn't get our amplification for sound permit until the morning of the event. But we had to, that was from the New York City Police Department, we had to get the site permit from the New York City Parks Department. There was another department you had to get $1 million of insurance for the audience, but the insurance didn't apply to anybody who was in the, who was actually on the stage or at the mic, only if you were sitting down in a chair in the audience. It was absurd. But anyway, $1 million worth of insurance from yet another office in the city, and yet another one to get a bond, which was another kind of insurance that protects just the city of New York in case, I suppose, there's some, you know, white supremacist demonstrations and some trashing or violence. Anyway, it just went on and on. And then on top of that, there was trying to get affordable audiovisual company. We've had a great company called Big Apple Media AV. They were fantastic. We had two huge 70-inch screens, four speakers. We did get our sound permit at the last minute, the morning of the event, but we had to advertise the event in advance, of course. And then, you know, like Kim Michael, who is, does a great job on the TAP website, he complained to me that he didn't wasn't let known about the event to put it in the calendar right in advance. We didn't know we had an event literally until the morning before, and on top or the morning of, and on top of that. So we had to do a lot of this on faith, and we did all of our marketing, all of our publicity for the event on faith. And on top of it, 3 days before the event, and I was still in California, 3 days before the event, our weather apps, anyway here, presumably they're national weather apps on an Android smartphone, said that there was 100% of rain the day before the event. And of course that could be a day off. And yet we already had to plunk down our money and not have it refundable up to the night at 10 p.m. the night before with the AV company. So with all of this anxiety, it went off without a hitch. And we had a chair company. We had 125 chairs. They were almost all filled. It was out in the Foley Square, which is part of Tom Paine Park, which was kind of perfect. which was perfect, Thomas Paine Park, you know, Second American Revolution, the revolution of truth for 9/11. And it was a perfect evening. The weather couldn't have been better. Started at 6:30 and went to 10 p.m., a little bit after. We went over a little bit. Even the films, we had the new Lawyers Committee for 9/11 inquiry film with Ed Asner that came in the day before. We couldn't even finish the program until the morning of. We had the latest TAP Truth Action Project promo film, national promo film, that Dylan Avery did for us with Sander Hicks at the last second. That came in the morning of the event, and everything just came together. Everything came together. It was wonderful, and I just want everybody to know, you don't have to take my word for it. Right now I'm working with a wonderful videographer. He's the videographer for Seattle 9/11 Truth, Mark Snyder, and he has received four different videos, Joe Friendly's video, Tom Reagan's video, Cat Waters' video, and then, of course, the videos that were actually shown at the event that we'll insert. And we're working right now on the edits of what's going to be a truly professional YouTube of the entire event. It should be up on YouTube within a week, and I will let everybody know to the 9/11 teleconference list where they can go and watch it. And I'm telling you, I'm doing the editing. I'm doing the editing with Mark, but I'm making the decisions as to the edits, and then he smooths things and does tweaks. But it's time-consuming, but it's highly detailed and time-consuming. I've never done a detailed edit like this for every single one of the 30 or 60 frames. I think it's something like 30 frames for every second, and I have to look at every one of them. Anyway, we're going to have a great film, a wonderful YouTube. Very soon, people can see it for themselves. The main speakers were Les Jamieson was the master of ceremonies. He did a great job as usual. Richard Gage spoke. Bill Jacob for Architects and Engineers. We showed the Peter Ketchum film, and I know it's great. Peter is on this call right now. We showed the Stand for the Truth film with NIST whistleblower Peter Ketchum, the first half of it about World Trade Center 7. Richard spoke. Then we showed the snippets, short clips, about 8 minutes each, something like that. No, 3 to 4 minutes each, from the highlights of the last year's Justice in Focus New York City conference at Cooper Union. We showed the highlights of that with Professor Halsey, and we showed clips of the of other highlights. I can't remember at the moment. It'll be obvious in the film. But Richard Gage had three films. He had the first half of Peter Ketchum's film, and he had two other films. Oh, the Bob McElvain Act, the introduction of the Bobby McElvain World Trade Center Investigation or Reinvestigation Act, technically. It's called the Investigation Act. And so there was a clip about that. All of those came together at the last minute because they had to be edited at the last second down to the length that we could use. And then we also had, then after that, we had the two TAP speakers. We had Bill Jacoby for the Truth Action Project TAP National. He spoke, and then after him, Sander Hicks of TAP New York City spoke, and they both effectively introduced the brand new world premiere of the approximate 8-minute Truth Action Project TAP promo film that Dylan Avery, of all people, of Loose Change fame, did for Sander, working with, Sander would tweak it, but Dylan did it. Sander would give, Sander and Les, but mostly Sander would decide what should be in it, and Sander did a fantastic narration for this thing. He wrote it and he narrated it, and Dylan did the visuals, and it's fantastic. So that was shown. And then the feature film was the 9/11 Museum Virtual Walking Tour, which was appropriate because we were only about four long blocks from Ground Zero. And everything was, it just went like clockwork, went like clockwork. We had people there from Australia. We had people there from Costa Rica. And because of where it was in open Foley Square in New York City, the backdrop, as you'll see from the video, it was not live streamed. We couldn't afford that. But it won't be long before there's a very professional YouTube of the entire event, everything, with the actual films that were shown inserted where they came in the program. So when you go to the YouTube, if you've already seen them, you can scroll forward to the next place in the program where there's an actual speaker at the mic. But what was really so wonderful is the backdrop just behind the mic with the two huge 70-inch screens with great resolution on either side of the speaker. Behind everything were the marble, white marble columns of the New York Supreme Court building. It couldn't have been better staged. It couldn't have been better weather. The chairs could hardly have been more filled. And because where we were, it was at the end of the day, people leave these federal buildings and New York State buildings, courthouse buildings and the other buildings in this federal and New York State square called Foley Square, they work late. And so all kinds of people are walking in the sides and in the background and on the sidewalks. And over just to the right, maybe 25 feet at the most, from the far right chairs in the audience that were set up from a chair company, there was a fountain with steps going up to the fountain, 5 or 6 of them, and people would come from the street, and they would just sit on those steps and watch. So it really couldn't have been better. I think what we should do, maybe I could tell you, we could either take comments or questions after this, and I do want to mention one other thing. The small miracle, or Richard Gage actually sent me an email saying, Barb, that event was a miracle. I have it. I can send it to you. And I think he's right. There was everything, the whole universe conspired, as it were, to make it work, and make it work almost perfectly. So, but what was fascinating is about 3 weeks before, the way the event happened at all, it's pretty fascinating. So about 3 weeks before 9/11, I called Richard Gage. Obviously, Richard would have his pulse on what was happening, and I called Les Jamison, who would have his pulse on what was happening in New York City, which usually involves Richard Gage and architects and engineers. So I called them both. And it happened that I happened to have called, apparently, and meet right after Les and Richard. First, I talked to Les. Les said, Barb, I don't know what to do. I said, what's happening in New York for the anniversary? I haven't heard anything. He said, you haven't heard anything because there was this guy named, I think his name was Peter. Anyway, I don't know his last name, don't know who he is. But he said there was this potential donor named Peter who was going to fund an event, our big event in 9/11, outdoors at, I think he said, Union Square. And when Les went to the Parks Department to try to see if it was available for the 8th, 9th, 10th, or 11th, any day leading up close to the event or to the anniversary or the day of 9/11 anniversary, it wasn't available. So when Les told me, when I called, about three weeks ahead of time, Les said, I just told Peter this, and he doesn't want to fund an event anywhere except for Union Station, at the park outside of Union Station. And so he's pulled out. We don't have anything, Barb. So I said, well, let me get off the phone. I called Richard Gage, and Richard was pulling his hair out. He said, Barb, I've already...
Barbara, are you there?
I think we lost Barbara.
She's showing that she's still
muted.
On the call, but
not muted. So yeah, she's still on the call. Maybe we ought to drop her and force her to call back. That's all.
By the way, can you hear me? Because they just asked me for a PIN, which I don't have.
We can hear you for the last minute. Okay.
Okay. All right. So just completing how the event happened. So I called Richard right after I talked to Les, and Richard had just heard this from Les. And Richard said to me, Barb, I don't know what we're going to do. I already have my ticket. I already know I'm going to stay with Deb Lee. I'm going to lose all this money. I'm going to be in, if I cancel my ticket, I don't want to. I want to be in New York City leading up to the anniversary. I'm going to be in New York City for 3 days and nights. I have nothing to do. What are we going to do? And so I said, well, I know what we can do. And had the vision for this event, to have a film event where the 9/11 Museum walking tour, which has incredible feedback from leaders of the movement. I've sent that to the list here for this call. It's ready-made. We can have that as the feature to kind of organize the event around, but we can also have all these new films. I knew that the TAP film was on tap, as it were, forgive the pun. I knew that the Lawyers Committee film was almost done. And I was already, on the Lawyers Committee calls with Jane Clark and Mick Harrison and Dave Meinschwinkel. And we needed Dave Meinschwinkel to introduce the Lawyers Committee, which he did at the event. Came in his best lawyer suit. He looked great. Gave a great opening to the Lawyers Committee film with Ed Asner. Brand new film. World premiere of that. So everything. Then I called back to Les and I said, Les, I just talked to Richard. What about doing this? And he said, great, I'll take it. Let's do it. And from that moment on, it was 16-hour days with Les and I producing this thing. And it all came together, literally, I'm telling you literally, 5 minutes before it started. So I'll leave it at that for this event. Now, I don't know if you guys want me to tell you about the other event in New York City I went to, which was...
why don't you do that? Why don't you give us a brief rundown of each one of them? And when you get to the one about the Asner film, I'm going to put David Cole and Chuck Smith on the call. Unmute them as well, so they may wish to comment on that as well. Okay.
Okay, well, I've already mentioned the Asner film, which is going to be in the YouTube of the whole New York City event on Friday, September 8th in Foley Square in Manhattan. So I've already mentioned that. If you want me to do it now, I could give you a thumbnail, not nearly as long, on the event. And I've sent the links. Everybody has the links to the videos of all of these that I gave to Ken, and it's already been sent to the list. So if you haven't seen them already, everything I'm talking about, except for the full professional video of the New York City event that Les Jamison and I produced, that won't be available for about a week. But there is an amateur partial film of it that I'm giving you the link for, that Kat Waters, who's a New York City 9/11 truth activist, did already put up on YouTube, and you already have that link, so you could watch the first half hour anyway and get a feel for the event. But the other event in New York City was the next day on September the 9th, and that was at the Hotel Beacon. It was a LaRouche PAC executive intelligence review. That's the LaRouche organization's publication. The EIR, it's called, Executive Intelligence Review, put on a really fantastic event that was standing room only. There could have been at least 200 people at it. It was in the Hotel Beacon in Manhattan, and I think that was Midtown. Anyway, the Hotel Beacon. And the speakers were Ray McGovern. The main speakers were Ray McGovern and William Binney, the NSA whistleblower. It wasn't directly about 9/11. It was about their critique of the claim that there was that the Russians hacked the DNC. And that gets technical, and you can watch the video for yourself. But what was fascinating, there were comments. It was about a two-hour event. The whole thing is about a four-hour video because they took comments and questions for almost 2 hours, including a major one from myself. But what was interesting is shortly after Dennis Speed, that's S-P-E-E-D, he was the main MC for the event, the LaRouche event on September 9th at the Beacon Hotel. Shortly after he started, this is all on the video that you have the link for, shortly after he opened the event, he stopped and said, well, we have some VIPs in the audience, so I want to recognize them. Now, this was an audience of at least 200 people already, and we had no idea who was in the audience. And I don't know if somebody slipped him a piece of paper, and I have no idea who that is, but he recognized first myself, then Richard Gage, then Les Jamison, and then Bill Jacoby. So that was really great, and you can see that on the YouTube. Okay, on the it's actually not a YouTube, but it's a link to their event. So that was a very important event if you're interested in the whole, you know, claims of Russian hacking and whether it's technically true or not. Binney has the reason that he believes it's not technically true, which I critiqued in one of my comments at the mic in the Q&A period. But anyway, that wasn't directly 9/11 linked, although there was a 9/11 first responder who is dying of lung disease who took the mic about halfway into the Q&A period, and that's pretty wild. It's probably worth seeing how incredibly passionate this person was and how it was handled by the organizers at the mic. So that was those were the two. Well, there was also flyering at Ground Zero at the PATH station called the Oculus, you know, and those happen every year. So those were some events, but I don't have any. I wasn't at those. I couldn't be at both, and I had to go to Washington, D.C. And then once we got to Washington, D.C., we had this wonderful event on September 11th itself that I'm sure Peter Ketchum will want to tell us about because he was a participant with Richard Gage and Bob McElvain in it. I was in the audience, made a comment in the Q&A, but it was basically, it was an architects and engineers press conference at the National Press Club. It was live streamed, and it is on YouTube. Anyway, there's a link, whether it's YouTube or otherwise, that you already have that Ken sent with the draft agenda for this call. So you have that. It was a really great short press conference, 20, 25 minutes, and then they went to the Q's and A's. Unfortunately, Richard has, for whatever reason, I'm assuming that the link that you have to the video of that press event, he chose not, for whatever reason, in that link to include the Q's and A's. That's unfortunate because they were very good, many of them. But anyway, it's just the formal part of the event. And it was a great event. And Peter Ketchum will, I'm sure, tell you more about that here in a minute. And then that evening, there was a pretty amazing event starting at 7 o'clock. It went for at least 4 hours. I think it was over until 11 or 11 p.m. And that was at the Holiday Inn in Roslyn at Keybridge. It was also live streamed by Humuk. You have the link to that that Ken sent with the draft agenda for this call, so you can see that as well. I highly recommend it. It includes, I'm sure, the Q's and A's and comments period at the end, which were very important, I believe. The main participants were, besides the MC, who I frankly don't know. Can't remember who that is. But it was put on, it was sponsored by the Washington, D.C. 9/11 Truth Group. The main organizer was Diana Castillo, who's a major activist there. So that event, the main speakers were Christopher Bolin, who was kind of held incommunicado until the very end, because he, you know, if people know, if the people who did 9/11 find out that Christopher Bolin is about to speak, they send their goons or threaten people, and the venues are often closed down. So anyway, Christopher Bolin was there with his new book, his new short book on 9/11. Forget the title, but it's on Amazon. And also the speakers were Barry Kissin, who is an attorney in Fort Detrick and an expert on the anthrax attacks, Richard Gage, of course, and Michael Springman, the author of Visas for Al-Qaeda. So that was a great event. I just recommend that everybody look at all these videos for yourselves, and I would recommend that you wait, please. If you're going to see the video of the event in New York City, watch 5 or 10 minutes most of the partial amateur video that you have the link to with the draft agenda for this call, and wait for about a week, and you're going to have a truly amazing professional video of the entire event. So that's my report. I think Peter Ketchum will want to talk about the event at the National Press Club.
Well, thank you so much, Barbara. And it appears that being a fairy godmother is a full-time job then, right?
Well, it certainly is for the month before 9/11. It was a 16-hour days. And I'm telling you, it's 16-hour days now editing the film that will be on YouTube in about a week with my wonderful videographer, Mark Snyder, who's the videographer for Seattle 9/11 Truth. He's doing a great job, as usual.
Okay, well, let me unmute Peter Ketchum, Chuck Smith, and David Cole, in case any of them would like to add to Barbara's summary here. Any of you guys want to say anything?
Well, this is Chuck.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I produced that Ed Asner video, and I was just curious if it's being received by the audience, Barbara.
Oh, my gosh. Wait until you see the video. And by the way, I believe that even if you look at the partial video that you already have the link for the draft agenda of this call, I believe that that's included. It comes to an end well before the end of the event. But I believe it's in there. So you'll get a feel for the audience. And the audience went crazy over this event. They loved it.
Oh, great, 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 great.
It's a great video. It's a great video.
It's a great video.
Well, you know, it's. I just want to chime in, and some folks don't know what I've been involved with, but just a quick summation. It was my brainchild, and I was the executive producer of 9/11 Explosive Evidence, Experts Speak Out, with Richard.
Right.
And
right.
You can see that on Teen Calls. And then I just recently produced a video called The Demolition of Truth, Psychologists Examine 9/11, and I've been doing these as a hobby, to just just like you guys, advancing the situation. So I've got three videos now in the ring or in the arena. They're swinging for everybody.
Well, hear, hear. they are all worthwhile, every single one of them. I was particularly taken with Demolition Truth, but as you know, Chuck knows, I helped work a little bit on this last one, the Asner one, so I'm pleased also to hear that it was well received.
Yeah, you gave me wonderful edit notes.
Thank you. Okay.
Can I just want to say, I think Peter Ketchum has to unmute himself because I've tried unmuting him and it's not working. I think he muted himself, and so Peter, if you're listening, I think you have to unmute
yourself. Yeah, star six, Peter, if you're muted, star six, if you'd like to join the conversation here, star six.
He seems to be stuck.
Peter, I don't know. Peter, if you're listening, just press star six on your phone. It should unmute your phone, but we're not able to do it from here for some reason. So you might have muted it yourself. Star six. Okay. So, David, do you have anything you want to add? David Cole? Guess not.
I'm going to take lecture mode, Ken, in case something's...
Funny. Yeah, okay, why don't you do that?
Nope.
Okay, so is either Peter Ketchum, who's this...
Can you hear me? This is Peter Ketchum.
Yes, Peter, go ahead. We can hear you.
Yeah,
go ahead.
I was trying to unmute. I kept doing star six, but it kept saying something like, you know, the organizer has muted the conversation. You cannot unmute your line. I kept trying, and it just wouldn't let me.
Okay.
Sorry about that. Okay. All right, well, glad you make it back to talk. Go ahead.
Yeah. So, as Barbara mentioned, I was honored to... invited to participate in Washington, D.C. for both the National Press Club event to announce the Bobby McElvain World Trade Center Investigation Act. And I spoke for a few minutes there. And then I was also invited to speak at that evening in Arlington at the D.C. 9/11 Truth event. And both of those videos are, you know, up on YouTube. So it was a really good experience for me, and I was happy to participate.
Peter, for the benefit of those who are unfamiliar with it, could you just give us a thumbnail summary of the Bobby McElvain Act and what it means?
Yeah. It essentially is proposed legislation this is being presented to Congress for them to enact. To conduct a new investigation of the World Trade Center collapses.
Okay.
And we went the next day, September 12th, a group of us, a large group of us, split up and we visited every single member of Congress. We visited the office of every single member of Congress to drop off a packet of information. I didn't organize that. I participated in it, but I wasn't the organizer. So the purpose right now is to try to get Congress to enact this, to pass this as law.
Right. Okay. Thank you. David, did you want to jump in and say anything?
I'm good, Ken. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Well, thank all of you who helped make these things happen, who participated in them, and who brought these reports here so that we can all be familiarized with the proceedings. And we'll look forward to next year. Hopefully something even greater will come down the pike for the next anniversary. Okay. Let's see. That brings us to our second. Yes.
I
beg your pardon. Thank you, sir. Yes. Okay. I need to make a correction to the minutes, to the agenda here. I said that it would be Carol Cheryl and Kat talking about the events in New England there, but actually it's Cheryl and Dick Attlee and Lynn Bradbury. Is that correct, Cheryl?
Yes, and Greg Longo's joined us, so possibly him also.
Okay, fine. So we'll just leave it on open right now, and you can go ahead and spearhead it there, Cheryl, and the others can join you as the spirit moves them, okay?
Okay, great. So I actually would prefer this, and Dick and Greg do this. So I don't know, Dick, do you want to start? I know you probably can't stay on the phone as long as everybody else. So.
Well, I'm very grateful to Cheryl and Lynn for putting together what happened at the main, was it the Maine Organic Gardeners and Farmers Association, MOGFA, or MOFCA, I always forget which word of that is in. They put on a big annual fair in Unity, Maine, every year. Thousands and thousands of people show up at this fair. Started out as a sort of a organic hippies thing many years ago. Lynn can certainly speak more to the history of it. And now, as she says, those same people are aging and white-haired, but they're still running the show, and they still have the same sort of instincts in terms of peace and social action. So they have big social action tents there. And for the last 4 years, Lynn has managed to get a table there, and has been a stalwart in manning that table for the 3 days of the festival or the fair. And this was my first time down there, and it's a very intriguing experience. I'm sure a lot of people on this call are familiar with this kind of thing. I've certainly done a lot of staffing of tables, but not 9/11 tables. And apparently the staff of the fair is very sympathetic to 9/11 truth. And the table next to us, Veterans for Peace, who've been sort of a little standoffish, I gather, in past years. By the time we were done this time, they were very much interested in what we were doing. So the two events outside of simply talking to people and having lots of very interesting conversations were a couple of presentations, one by me on the World Trade Center and one by Cheryl on hijackers, which I can't speak to because I was only able to be there the first day, Friday. So maybe she could speak a bit to that. We had a couple of handouts we had put together. One was on resources, videos, books, articles, and websites for people to take. And then there were handouts. I had a handout for the WTC presentation, complete with 5 pages of colored figures. So we decided to put those up on the web, and if anybody's interested in looking at them, I put them on my website because I can do a fast turnaround on my website. Whether they'll stay there or not, I don't know. But if you're interested in looking at them, there's a short URL for it, which is dickatlee.com. That's dickatlee.com/CGF for the Common Ground Fair. And that'll take you to the main page that links you to the various things that are available there. We also had a film loop, which I had put together last year, which we couldn't really run effectively because the position of the table was such that people were, the light was falling on the screen when people would look at it, and it made it very difficult to see the screen, and we didn't have any electric power also, which sort of limits what you can do. But the sequence of films, which are played by, if people are familiar with the VLC video player, you can have a playlist, and then if you can just be running through it, and if someone has some particular issue they want to talk about, you can immediately go to the one that there would be useful for them to see. So it was. I gather, since I missed out on the second 2 days, a tremendously successful event with lots of people seemed like a lot of people were clued into what was going on. And I think the only sort of odd situation there, which we're always potentially running into, was the issue of Israel. We didn't want to really talk about it unless we got involved in conversations with people to where they could understand where we were coming from, so it didn't just seem like we were kind of, you know, Israel's the knocking boy, let's just bash on Israel, but it had real substantive reasons for considering Israel as a potential source of some of this. And there was one woman who, after one of our people had gone to, I guess it was Greg, he could talk about that, gone to talk at one of the other booths and got into a conversation with her, and she then came later to our booth and was saying that he sounded like he was anti-Semitic and got kind of unpleasant, but apparently a couple of younger people who were standing nearby got involved and took over the discussion, and she finally left. And there were no repercussions of that, so we lucked out on that, I think. So that's sort of the basic idea. I think there was a lot of contact with a lot of people, and it all went very well. Both of our presentations were standing room only in the little 30-seat tent that they had for political action commentators, and both of them went very well. So I'll leave it to the others to talk further on that.
Okay, thank you very much, Vic.
Yeah. Lynn, do you want to say anything? And I wanted to just say, I think Lynn was just super. She has made this, organized this every year, and I really appreciate that, Lynn. It's a great job.
Well, couldn't do it without all of your help. I just want to say the first year, it's a sustainable agriculture fair, and so I sold the idea to them in the application, I believe, by saying that the sustainability of democracy depends upon truth, courage, and science, truth, and courage, something like that. And I think they liked that. And I've had different staff members tell me they love having us there. And Veterans for Peace, I mean, we have some of the same books out on our table as they have, so I knew we should be near each other. And we made friends with them this year, and they actually told me they loved having us there. So first year we were there, when people would walk by, they literally would do double takes to see our big yellow sign that said Maine 9/11 Truth. They could not believe that we were at the fair. I just don't think people have seen that kind of thing featured anywhere, at least not up here in Maine. And each year, people were just relieved to have somebody they could talk about it with. You know, a lot of them had their own doubts, but nowhere to speak about it. So,
also, Lynn has this incredible sign about 4 by 6 feet or something, which looks like one of these, when you see them on the web, of keyword maps. All different sizes of lettering of just about everything you could possibly imagine. We've got to somehow get a picture of that thing and put it up.
Well, I wrote on it. Started out to be, do you read this? Have you seen this? Have you seen the news or something like that? And then I said, no. Then why not? Ask why not. And so it sort of looks like a messy newspaper newsprint. It's all black and white, and I literally filled the page with just phrases that have to do with 9/11 Truth, and people will stand out there in the middle looking at it. People have taken pictures of it.
Yeah, great.
So it just shows people that there is a lot to it. I mean, you can't talk about it all in 5 minutes. The first year after the fair, I came home and I told one of my daughters that four of us were kept busy talking at once, and she was appalled. She goes, four of you were ganging up on one person at a time? And I said, no, four. Our booth is so popular that four people were kept busy talking with passersby at the same time. There were even six people there.
Well,
helping that year.
There was one guy there who said that he had been in the, he worked for the CIA, and I said, well, most people I know in the CIA are basically analysts. And he said, no, I was in operations. And I said, well, what were you doing? He said, well, I was in the operations center, presumably at Langley, on September 11th. And I said, well, what were the reactions of these people, if he was telling the truth? And he said, they were really surprised, taken completely off guard. And Lynn commented, well, have you ever heard of compartmentalization? And he just kind of blew us off and walked off.
And Cheryl, tell them about the girl.
Which
the one who her father had been in the Navy intelligence.
I don't think I had that conversation. I think that.
I get maybe I did then. I asked her. She said she'd always been skeptical. She was pretty young, maybe in her early 30s, and she'd always been skeptical about everything she reads or listens to. And I asked, well, why were you brought up that way, or why do you what do you attribute it? And she said, her father was in naval intelligence, and he had been approached by the CIA to be a member, and he refused, but he always told her to not believe everything or anything that you read in the paper.
Yep.
Anyway.
Sage advice.
Yeah. So Lynn, do you have any other comments? Because I have a few.
No, you go ahead, Cheryl.
Okay, and then I don't know, Greg, you might want to say something. But what I noticed, a lot of people thank just for being there, and so it just really felt good.
That's
I mean, you
true.
Could kind of feel the love, you know. And we met, I was able to recruit five young people who want to be part of this conference call. And so far I've found three of their addresses in my pockets where I'd stuffed the notes. So, and there's a couple more, hopefully. So, and then I ran into several people who had never heard of World Trade Center 7, and then a lot of people did not know what the PNAC was, so I did a lot of explaining of those two things over the weekend. And then some guy who really likes us, last year he donated a whole big box of AE materials, and this year he gave us another box, and his daughter came by finally and said that it was her father that did this, so none of us know him, but anyway. So that's really, you know, we had a lot of support. It was just
yeah,
it was really
thank
great.
Yes, everybody does thank you for being there. And I always tell them, thank MOFCA for their open-mindedness, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, so we reached a lot of people, and it's really, it made me feel like we need to be doing a lot more of this everywhere. I just really...
there are 20,000 people a day. Not that they all go through the social political action tents, but potentially that's available to them. And we had an ad in the, you know, like 70-page newspaper that Richard Kate paid for. And we have tons of printouts, still maybe a third of what he had printed out 4 years ago still left, and lots of contributions from, you know, all of the people you know.
Yeah, the 6-foot table was completely, totally covered. When I arrived, I had a whole bunch of materials and a whole bunch of different CDs and DVDs, and there wasn't any place to put them. And the table next to us on the other side of the VFP people was some group that... fortunately, never showed up, and we kind of began to flow over onto their table also. But it's, you know, Lynn has put together a massive amount of information.
Well, collected from all of you, and Barbara's Behind the Smoke Curtains, we had those, and Experts Speak Out, and Steve Shaw in the past has handed us lots. We have a lot of books that have to do with 9/11, and people often take pictures of the bookshelf.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And Barbara, thank you. You gave me those videos at the Left Forum, and I brought 27 of them I had, and we gave them all out, so that was great.
Yeah, that was a really great part of it.
And
yeah.
Experts Speak Out in the past has been fantastic, a fantastic outreach tool. And I always tell everybody that it's on YouTube, so because you don't want to hand everybody a video. And whenever we hand videos to people, we say, always, please, don't let it sit on a shelf. Keep it moving.
Yeah.
And our resources page had links to all of the major films on YouTube for people who wanted to look for them.
Yeah, that's a great page, Dick.
Yeah. And Greg, did you want to say anything? Are you still?
Sure. It was a tremendously positive experience for me. A lot of good feedback. We did talk to one military person who brought up the USS Liberty, and he knew more about it. He knew enough to say that there was real power to have that covered up for 50 years from day one by LBJ and whoever controls LBJ at the time. And he said, that's power, that's power. Mm-hmm. And, of course, we knew what he was talking about and who exerted the power. So... it was hard for me not to talk about Israel, Zionism, the whole history of our. I did the best I could, and I was a little somewhat proactive in putting a complaint to that Marxist socialist communist. Group that thought, accused me of being anti-Semitic.
Good. I'm glad you did that. And you were a little proactive in wearing the shirt that you wore to begin with.
Which one was that? I have a bunch of them.
War is real.
War is
real. Oh,
war
did I wear that
real.
One?
Oh,
no, it says war is real. War
is real.
Israel and war Israel. Maybe that turned them off. I don't know.
Greg, do you feel that we were self-censoring too much?
I was. Well, no, I wasn't. I just, you know, I feel we're self-censoring way too much. I mean, when I do my radio program, which I've done for, what is it now, 14 or 15 years, I start off by saying, our passionate attachment with the state of Israel, our entangled relationship, and our subservient relationship with Israel, and I ask the audience, you can decide who is subservient to whom.
Oh.
And I've made it clear that we're subservient to, not Israel, but international Zionism.
Uh-huh,
I've studied the history of how bankers get us into these wars and the whole history of it. I don't call it Judaism. I call it international Judea, which is different. They're not religious at all. They're
sure. We're running short on time.
Being Jewish. So that's.
I don't think we were self-censoring so much. I think what the idea was not to be direct out front with materials and people's faces, but in discussions, and almost all the discussions I had with people when they would come around to, well, you know, who do you think did it? And one of the things we'd say is there are a remarkable number of people who are either avowed Zionists or dual nationality people.
Right.
And, so many of them had connections in the power structure that would have made it facilitated this whole thing. I didn't stop from doing that. I just didn't
want
to have it.
Cheryl, we're running short on time because we have to leave space for Wayne's presentation and announcements and so forth. So can we wrap up here?
Yeah, I just have one last comment. It's the woman who attended Dick's presentation the next day came running up to the table and said, "You've changed my life. I never knew any of this," and she seemed very happy about it. So
that's
a good note to end on.
I just wanted to say, this is Nita. Can you hear me?
Oh, hi, Nita.
I'm present because I wasn't on the list last time, and I was present too.
Okay.
So
We're going to fix that, Nita, for the final minutes. Okay.
Because I came in when it was muted. So. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, so does anybody have a quick comment or question regarding any of the presentations that you just heard before we move on to the next item on our agenda? We should leave a little space for comments and questions. Does anybody have any? I have one. Who is this?
Ken, this is Dick Atley. I'm going to tune off. I really wanted to hear Wayne's piece. I'm certainly looking through his PowerPoint, but I listened to the whole Halsey presentation. I'm hoping that Wayne will comment on why it was that study accepted the fire diagrams of NIST when they were so patently, not in coherence with the photographs of the time in terms of the fire on the 12th floor. So I'm very curious about why that happened. So, great study. But
well, I could give you a tentative answer to that, Dick, and I believe that they were trying to use it as a hypothesis to see whether it was to test it as a hypothesis. I mean, that's the whole point of the study, was to say, is this hypothesis credible? You know, and the determination was that it is not. Okay, so I think that's why.
Okay.
But that's just my opinion. That's just what I gathered from it. Okay.
Okay.
Second comment.
Before you leave, Dick, before you leave, Dick, I'd like you to hear the comments that I have. But does anybody else have a comment before I make mine?
I do, Barb.
Barb, go ahead.
Yeah, just real quick. Just before this call, a few hours, I sent everybody, if you haven't seen it already, an incredibly important article just published, 26-27, yesterday and today, Wayne Manson report, on the threats by a CIA drug-running airline front company linked to Vert Walker III.
Barbara, that would be an announcement. Can you hold that for the announcement?
Oh,
right now we're just talking about the stuff that happened on 9/11, okay?
Well, no, I understand, but just let me finish the sentence. I will do the announcement. People need to know that we're about to hear about Professor Halsey and his University of Alaska study. And these people connected to the Bush crime family have literally threatened Halsey's graduate students.
Right.
The email came in at 2:30 today.
Please. Stay on topic. Topic now. Comment on presentations already presented. Does anybody else have any besides me? Yes or no? Please. All right, hear none. Therefore, I won't make my comment. Yeah, congratulations are certainly in order for all the people that did all the marvelous work around this anniversary event. Now, here's the comment that I have. This comment is to those who did the New England thing. I am very impressed by the reception that you got at that particular location. And it just occurs to me that the 9/11 Truth Movement ought to give very serious consideration to a targeted outreach to the organic, non-GMO, anti-vax sort of communities that are out there, because those folks are already psychologically prepared for the fact that they are being lied to, okay? And I think that's a very, very important precondition for people accepting 9/11 truth, is that they already understand that the authorities are not telling them the truth about some very important things. So I'm just thinking that it would be great if in the long run we could sort of link up with these other movements and find sort of common ground, common cause, you know, but I just wanted to throw that in. Okay?
I think that this is Lynn. That's very important because a lot of people who come by the table, they say, oh, I already know about that. Of course, I'm anti-government already from the 60s.
Right.
They are prepared.
Yeah.
By the way, this is Barb. I do have a comment, one last comment on the presentation, mine in particular. I just want to alert people that in about a week or so, maybe even less, when you get the YouTube link to the professional video of the main New York City event on September 8th in Foley Square, the whole purpose of that event, besides getting the information out, was actually to create the video, which can now reach millions of people. And within it is a pitch, a very important pitch, for donations to the Lawyers Committee for 9/11 Inquiry. So please, when you get it, send it widely and ask people to donate. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you for that, Barbara. Okay. All right. So if there's no other comment on that, then I think, Wayne, are you home yet?
Yes. Can you hear me?
We need to do the switcheroo here on the online thing. And folks that have Internet access, this is the time to try to link up to the online meeting using your browser if you want, so that you can follow Wayne's presentation as he gives it visually.
What do we look for on that, Ken?
Well, it's the link that's provided. You just cut, but don't click on the link. Cut and paste it, okay, or copy and paste it. Copy the entire thing. It's HTTPS, something, free teleconference, blah, 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 whatever, you know. But you copy that and paste it to your browser, and it should take you there.
Well,
Ken, okay.
There's one additional step. There are spaces in it when you copy it. And the spaces
there
are part of the problem.
There are what? What's
there's
the word?
Spaces. There's spaces.
There's spaces in the link.
I don't think so, but okay. If you think there are, take spaces out. But I don't remember there being any spaces in there.
Well, that's what caused the trouble. So.
Well, that's what caused the trouble in the original. But I don't think I think in this version, in the corrected version, I don't think it's there. But if it is, then you know we'll have to just remove spaces. Okay. Okay. So while you're all doing that, let's see if Wayne and I can switch screens here.
Yeah, there should be two screens open, and you have to tell me what you see on it when you give it to me. So hopefully it'll all work. It's
Screen sharing is off. Oh, this is so complicated. Screen sharing off. I wonder why it's off.
Yeah. Well, Ken, do you think I should just go through the PDF presentation as it is? You know, it's easily downloadable.
Yeah. I mean, we can do the old-fashioned way, for sure.
Okay.
Everybody has a PDF. Yeah.
So the place that you can, if you don't get through the corrected link, you can go to the website www.hopeoutloud.org/Pentagon, all lowercase. You'll get to a page that has a bunch of the Pentagon presentations, and towards the bottom you'll see the WTC Halsey a link to that. So that's towards the bottom of that particular page. It's about a 50-page presentation. I'm going to try to go through it as quickly as I can. And Ken, I have to tell you that you answered Dick Attlee's question as well as I could have. So
thank you. Okay.
So good. So let me just begin here by going on to slide two. The Halsey, of course, went through his progress report on September 6th. Was by the University of Alaska Engineering, Institute of Northern Engineering in the College of Mines. Crowdfunding was sponsored by Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, and it was focused on analyzing the collapse of Building 7. And he presented his findings and conclusions. The research team was, Halsey was the project manager. He had two graduate students who helped him. Phones out and Zili Kwan. And if you on slide three, you can get to the other information. There's a link to the video. There's a link to the presentation that he actually gave. And then there's an article that we put in the 9/11 newsletter or up on our website right now about this and from which this presentation has been taken. Slide four. This is just describes what the NIST WTC7 study is all about, what Building 7 is. There's not a lot to really say about the about this. When we go to slide five, there's a picture that shows where Building 7 is. And the only thing I want to point out, since we all know this much of it, the thing I want to point out is that the Building 7, if you take a look, it's trapezoidal, and in the top right-hand corner is the corner that we're going to be analyzing.
Hey, Wayne,
yeah.
Your voice is breaking up. Your voice is breaking up a little bit. Is there any way you could, like, either be closer to the microphone or use a different sound system?
Yes, is this better?
Yes.
For the moment. Yep.
Okay. So, let me know if it's a problem. But the slide five shows the where Building 7 is, and the thing that's important about that is on the top right hand side, the trapezoidal area. That's the area that where the collapse initiation was going to be, and that's where we're going to be spending a lot of our time. That's the northeast corner. Going on to slide six. It says that basically what he was trying to do was review the NIST analysis, and he expressed his findings in a way that both technical people and lay people can actually understand. So I think it's very, very useful, and he ultimately concludes that fire did not cause the collapse of Building 7. Slide 7. This is his bold statement. So he says, this is a quote, did WTC7 collapse from fires? Our study shows that fire is not the cause. I'm not going to tell you what did it. I'm just going to tell you that it wasn't that. In other words, fire. This contradicts the findings presented by NIST. Slide 8. This is a very good for educational materials to the general public. It
takes a little bit of time to go through it. It contains elements that are easy to communicate to the wider public audience. And the following observations about the analysis are useful in doing outreach in talking about Building 7 and running across people who are a bit of naysayers. Slide 9. During his presentation, he muses. The first thing I would have thought about when I got involved here is the columns obviously got really, really hot and lost strength, and we ended up losing the building. And this is important. However, nobody seems to think that ever happened because they didn't. That's not the anyone. That's not something anyone is claiming. They might change their tune and start talking about that now, I suppose, but that'll be pretty hard. So, slide 10. This progressive collapse has been ascribed to fires, internal fires that created enormous stresses within the building structure, which then, due to relieving those stresses, caused the beams to bend or buckle. It caused the girder to get pushed and then rocked out of place and led to an eight-floor cascade that led to a massive collapse of the entire structure. That's the hypothesis. He's going to be going through some of the flaws that they, and omissions and misrepresentations that they went through to come up with that that Rube Goldberg collapse mechanism. And then he's going to talk about what correcting some of those would actually be, and he'll explain why some of their results were the way they were. So it was a great presentation. Slide 11. The key assumption was that the east exterior wall was fixed in space and absolutely immovable. This is a key assumption because it means that there was no eastward wall deformation, and everything due to thermal expansion had to be forced all the structure to move to the west. Where it then jammed into the rest of the structure. And the way that they represented that, it made it jam it even harder. And so many of these omissions and errors have been documented by Halsey and his team. On slide 12, we have this claim that the collapse was initiated by the expansion and movement of the floor the movement of the floor is the list of columns 9. The most interesting observation was fire-induced thermal expansion. In my opinion, the most valuable thing that coming out of this was that it clearly shows that the thermal expansion was to the east, pushing those exterior walls that were supposed to be fixed. That was the direction of the movement due to the thermal expansion. Slide 13, slide 14 is this beam expansion. I'm going to go through a little bit of the structure here. I'm going to try to do it pretty quick. The thermal expansion of beams K3004 to 3G3005 caused the pushing of the beams into the girder that framed in the column 79. Slide 15 is the floor plan. And what I've done here on slide 15 is I've highlighted the beams that were heated up and expanded. This is showing you all the beams and the columns and the girders. And it highlights where girder A2001 is, which is the one that got supposedly pushed off the seat. So going down to the next slide, is something that is slide 16 is a detail of the drawings. I'm not going to go over that, but you'll see the same picture on the left hand side of the slide 17, 18. Slide 17 that describes what we're going to see is that when the beams were heated up, the expansion pushed the girder. A2001 was pushed into the load. And slide 18 shows the pushing of those beams into the girder A2001, and you can see on slide 18 that it's been pushed. And that pressure is what's going to have caused a number of things that happened there. We're going to go through them a couple at a time. Slide 19 talks about some of the other issues that are
hear some of that in the background. You can go on mute.
I am looking to see who that is, Wayne. But, oh, I guess it's Barbara. I'll have to mute you a little bit, Barbara.
Okay. So
I'm not making any noise.
Oh, okay. All right.
Well, I'm come on now. Let's just continue on. Slide 19 begins to talk about the concrete and how the floors are connected to the concrete. How the concrete and the floors are put together can make everything move together, or they can move separately. A composite floor structure is a concrete floor that is fastened to the steel beams and steel frames using what they call shear connectors, which are round bolts that are welded to the top flange of the girder that they pour the concrete onto. And when they pour it, it all becomes a single composite structure. Slide 20. There are many questions concerning the structure of the floor system. There's pictures that have been found that show that, in fact, there are shear studs, so it should be a composite, means that they were broken, suggesting that they're either a non-composite, so the slab can slide over steel, or partially composite, so it could parts of it could slide over the steel. And that only makes a difference if there's a difference in the expansion of the concrete. And it's my understanding that when NIST did their analysis, they assumed no thermal expansion of the concrete. And it's one of the things that University of Alaska Fairbanks looked at. And they ultimately determined that the type of floor structure didn't matter. That's largely because the east wall could move. Slide 21. They also looked at the falling girder issues. And they took a look at the falling girder, A2001, was supposed to have gotten pushed off the seat, fallen down onto the floor below it, pushing or breaking the girder seat at the column 79, and then cascading down for eight floors unsupported. Slide 22 shows the NIST figure that shows the eight floors in which the column has now come unsupported. At least there are some minor connections that appears where vertical support, lateral strains are on the north side alone. But this is what they say caused the buckling in this column is what caused the building to come down. So they did the analysis of what happens if you were to do this, and they used a 0.52 hertz frequency. Tony Zimbati said he was supposed to say 0.52. He said 52 in the presentation. But the end result was that the amount of force that it could exert landing on the floor because of limited time it had to accelerate was only 34% of the 632,000 pounds required to break the connections on the floor, and so it was insufficient to share their girder bearing seat, rendering their hypothesis of column 79 buckling infeasible. NIST modeled the connections differently. Professor Halsey's team reviewed modeling in the area of column 79. Where they used detailed representations of all the connections. The connections were described in the erection drawings, and they were there in the drawings to instruct the construction team how to put it all together. Slide 25. They show the details used by NIST to model the connections in the northeast corner, which is where they did their detailed analysis. The rest of the structure had a lower level of detail done. Outside the selected area, they used just fixed or pin connections. So there was a very different representation. And that is important in actually taking a look at how the building collapsed under visualization. Slide 26 shows the area that they modeled in detail and where they did. The area outside the blue area is the outside of that, they used the fixed pins to represent it, and that created a very different failure. Slide 27. Because they were doing so such different modeling, Halsey poses two questions. They have the same stiffness as what you're modeling in the more detailed area around the column 79, or and does it have an influence? Does it change how the system is going to respond? Slide 28. He explains why the visualization that NIST shows, the kind of the videos of their finite element analysis, why it looks so lopsided, and that's because the fixed pins in the unmodeled area are so much more rigid that they don't collapse and like the rest of the building does. We'll see that. Well, I'm not going to be showing you the videos of it, but many of us have seen those already. Slide 29, he describes the difference between these fixed pins and the detailed modeling, and he asks the question, why is it so different on one side than the other? Is it the same thing? If you go to slide 30, we have he showed, and many of us have seen the side-by-side of the Building 7 and the NIST visualization. And he drew a vertical line showing about where the finite element analysis was using the fixed pins, which is to the right, and the more detailed to the left. And as remember, when we've seen this, the left side crumbles, and the right side stays intact and doesn't really do much of anything except maybe start to sag, and then they stop the analysis. Taking a look at the construction of column 79, he goes through some level of detail to point out another flaw that NIST made, and that is the construction of the connection at column 79.
I'm going to mute just a second, sir. This is definitely coming. Well, let's do that. Go ahead, Dwayne. We're in presentation mode. Now, go ahead. Dwayne, can you continue? Oh. Wow. Wayne, press star 6, would you please?
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you now. Go ahead.
Okay. Apparently I had done a star 6 earlier. I'm on slide 31. The column 79 was an H beam, side plates welded onto it. Dimensions of the side plates were larger than the width of the beam. It meant that there was going to be a lip on this side of the beams that NIST did not represent. The girder bearing seat would have been inset between the lips so that if the beam were to slide, it would hit these steel lips and could not get pushed off the girder seat. So they caught them in another error. Slide 32 shows the picture, shows the H-frame, or the H-beam with the side plates welded on and where the lips are. Take a look at the bearing seat. This didn't represent it, and Halsey says that it's not possible to move the girder web beyond the seat as claimed by NIST. Slide 34 is part of a element analysis piece, I think, is from the SAP 2000 program. And what this is showing is the beam girder A2001 getting pushed up against the web, and it can't move. NIST didn't have that got pushed up against the lip. And NIST didn't have that, so they assumed that it could keep on going. But in fact, it was restrained. Slide 35. There's also a couple of other things that NIST forgot, so shall we say. on that is some missing bracing beams. They didn't include three steel members in their analysis that provided lateral support to a critical beam that had to fail for their Rube Goldberg collapse to have happened. The NIST collapse initiation hypothesis would not happen, according to Halsey. The girder would not buckle if you had actually modeled it. Slide 36 is our floor plan again, and this time I've highlighted with some red ovals the three bracing beams that go between girder or beam 3005 and A3004. So that's what they meant. If you go to slide 37, it gives you a different perspective on these particular connections. Again, that's what they left off. Slide 38, they also forgot some partial height web stiffeners. NIST neglected these partial height web stiffeners that were shown in the erection tongs. Given all the other bad things that NIST did, it was critical that these things not be there also for them to happen. If they were there, then the web on the girder A2001 would have been so much more rigid that it would not have been able to fail. And Halsey says, our UAF analysis shows that the girder will not fail with the partial height web stiffeners installed.
What is a web stiffener?
So let's go on to slide 39. 39 and 40 are of the same connection. What we see here is a side view on slide 39 that shows the beam A2001 in cross section, and then you can see that there are two rectangles at the bottom. The purpose of those are to make sure that the lower flange and the vertical piece remain perpendicular. They were on the shop drawings, and I think we have to thank David Cole for doing a lot of research and helping find a lot of these pieces. Slide 40 shows it in color. This is probably the best to look at. And you can see what these things are doing. So in the NIST analysis, in which you didn't have the lips on slide 40, you can see that the beam would have gone, according to their story, gotten pushed off to the right-hand side, and then the web would have failed. The web is the lower piece that's perpendicular there. It would have bent and allowed the girder to have fallen off. But with the web stiffeners, that would not have been possible because there'd be no flexing of the or would have been far too hard for it to flex like let loose. So moving on to what I think of the bombshell piece of the analysis here, slide 41. The UAF shows that the key NIST assumption was that the exterior column in the northeast corner was fixed and immovable, and this was inappropriate. As I said earlier, it forced all the thermal expansion to push west into the A2001 girder, and it was necessary in order to create the results of the thermal expansion central to the NIST progressive collapse hypothesis. If the east exterior beams were not fixed and could be pushed, then the stresses would be a lot lower, and therefore you could not have the internal stresses that NIST says was there to that created the Rube Goldberg collapse. So UAF did a more comprehensive model, and just for consistency, they used the NIST fire model. Just trying to show that if you use whatever they use, that it wouldn't make any difference, and that's what it showed. Slide 42 is the SAP 2000 model. It just shows an overview of the building and a lot of the connections that they were representing.
not a lot of detail in this particular image, but slide 43 is showing the fires, and I think what you're going to see is the fires are most intense on the southeast corner of the floor, we're going to see that later. Even though NIST claims that the collapse of the building was due to GERD failure on the northeast side, in which the fires are not quite as intense. Slide 44. With the UAF analysis, not assuming the exterior columns to be fixed, but to be flexible, the floor assembly thermally expanded in the direction opposite from what NIST forced their model to show in the area around column 79. The results of allowing the structure to expand freely resulted in minimal stresses throughout the floor assembly, and we'll see some of that in the following slides. I've highlighted slide 45, many things here. These are what Halsey says. I kind of broke it up. So notice that our results in the SAP 2000 model show column 79 moving 1.92 inches to the right. The Abacus model shows it moving 1.85 inches to the right, and they did the analysis in two different ways to get very very similar answers. This said the movement was 5.5 inches to the left, which they revised to 6.2 inches when it was pointed out that the girder seat was actually a little bit bigger than they had had claimed when they got caught with a wrong dimension. Slide 46. The following slides are going to be showing movement of floors 12 and 13 with respect to the thermal centroids in the next couple of slides. Slide 47 is shows the thermal expansion, and you can see column 79 is highlighted with a big circle, and you can see that the displacement around there is modest, and I've circled the color code. This is 1.62 in that area, and the furthest amount that the building wall will have expanded, the exterior walls will have been pushed, is the kind of the dark red on the kind of lower right-hand side, and that's 6 inches to the right, and that means to the east. Because remember, the top, the far part of the trapezoidal floor is away from the twin towers in the northeast corner, where column 79 is. Slide 48 is using other model, the Abacus model, and they show it moving 1.85 inches to the right. The next slide is next steps. The next steps are that the Halsey will be issuing a draft report later in the fall. There's going to be a 6-week public comment period, and a final report is going to be scheduled for release in early 2018. So far, the only critique that I've heard on any of the blogs that I've been made aware of, the debunker blogs, is the fact that Halsey doesn't show what the girder movement was. He shows what the floor, probably the concrete expansion is. If it's a composite floor, they're the same. If it's a non-composite, then the girder may have shifted by a slightly different amount. But again, because the wall would be, the exterior wall is now movable, everything would have been moving out to the right hand or to the east direction. So that is what I have. So I can take questions if anyone's still on.
Well, yeah, this is Ken. Wayne, we're really grateful for someone with your technical expertise to break down such a complicated overview in a little more bite-sized chunk, but I still think it's probably a lot of information for a lot of us to take in all at one time. But so thank you so much for taking the time to break, you know, to have really, you know, broken it up like this. Thank you very much. Does anybody have any questions or comments for Wayne? Oh, I'm sorry. We're all muted. Everybody's muted, so let me quickly correct that.
Oh, good.
Oh, there we go.
This is Will.
Okay.
Okay. I have a
question. Yeah, Will, go ahead. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Is the animation done, Wayne?
Could you, I'm not sure what the question is. I think, are you asking, did the University of Alaska, Fairbanks, do their finite element analysis where they show the collapse? And the answer is no. They still have some more things to do. And I get this sense that there's going to be, this is not the end of it. They're going to be wrapping it up, but there's going to be some others. He alluded to doing some analysis where he removes all the core columns, but he didn't talk about those. But I think there's more to come. They're going to be issuing the draft report sometime this fall. I got think it's going to be like probably another a month or so, and then it'll be a 6-week comment period, and we'll still respond to whatever people ask. Did I answer your question?
This is Barb. I have a comment. It's Barb.
Go ahead, Barb.
Okay, a couple of things. I hope everybody watches all of these videos from all of these great events surrounding the 9/11 anniversary from September 8th, Friday, through 9/11 anniversary itself, Monday, September 11th. One of them is the event the evening, 7 to about 11 p.m. In Roslyn, Virginia, part of Arlington, Virginia. And in that event, in the comments, now Peter Ketchum was there, Richard Gage was there, Michael Spreeman was there, and Barry Kissen was there. They were the major speakers. And in the comment period, I took the mic, and I made this very simple comment that the audience exploded and clapped, okay? And that's indicative of how important it is to do. The problem is this is a great presentation. Halsey has done a great job. But what we basically have in front of us, even when Halsey's done, what we basically have, even when he has his visual simulation, which I understand is coming once he gets past what he called a software glitch, which is the reason for the delay. Okay, I heard that from Richard Gage himself about 3 weeks ago. But anyway, what we basically have is a he said, she said. We have a situation of warring technical experts in a court of law. And we need to simplify this. And the way that I propose to simplify it, to get the attention, is of lay people on the street when we talk about World Trade Center 7, is to say, look, remember the movie JFK. Remember the magic bullets. That it's impossible that the Warren Commission official story of how JFK was killed, let alone who did it, cannot be true. Remember the magic bullet. So I said, suggest referring to column 79 as the magic column. And people instantly got it. Okay, that's my number one comment. I think we should start with that. We should package that and begin with it to get to layman, to get beyond the warring expert, because we're going to have a great expert. We're going to have Professor Halsey and all of his technical arguments, but they're going to cause people's eyes to glaze over, and they're going to say, well, how do I know which expert is right? So that's a good way to start, because they already know it's a meme. And they already know the magic bullet, the magic column 79. They're going to open their mind at the beginning to get the information. Then we have to simplify this information, just get the high points for them from the Halsey report, and we're going to be able to show them side by side. I'm told Halsey's going to have his simulation, his visual simulation. You're going to be able to see that simulation. You're going to be able to see the NIST simulation that stopped after the first 2 seconds or something anyway, and then you're going to be able to put them side by side in the middle with the actual video of the collapse. And that's good. That together with the meme of the magic column like the magic bullet, I think it's going to get it for people. Even the kindergartner can get that. That's my first point. It's a way to to get the message across, to open people's minds at the outset. The second point is I just want to make sure people are aware that the Halsey video that was live streamed and has been put out is not a very good video because the camera was way back in the back of a classroom. And Mark Schneider, the videographer for Seattle 9/11 Truth, has done a much better video of it. He's cleaned it up. He's zoomed in on Halsey. And that is the link that's in the link for all these events for the 9/11 anniversary period that you already have from me that Ken sent in the draft agenda. So I recommend sending that link to people. Watch it and compare it, even the first 5 minutes, to the Halsey video itself from the live stream, and it's not even close. Okay, thank you.
Barbara, while you have the mic, I think this would be a time to just give a summary capsule of the breaking development regarding the repression of academics that were involved. Can you talk about that real quick?
Yes, and that link, I sent it to the 9/11 teleconference list about 2:30 today, California time. No, I guess it was earlier than that, about 11:30. Anyway, you got it. So be sure and read the Wayne Madsen article from Wayne Madsen Report, dated 26/27, that's today, September 2017. It's mind-boggling. The bottom line is it's the Bush family CIA drug-running airline front company linked, Vert Walker-linked people that have actually threatened Halsey's graduate students with never being able to have employment in the future if they continue with this project. And my gut told me, when Richard told me about 3 weeks ago, when I called him and he said, Barb, what am I going to do? Our event in New York City has just been canceled. What are we going to do? He also told me that how disappointed he was that he had just recently heard from Professor Halsey that they had a, quote, software glitch, unquote, that was going to delay the release of the draft report with its very strong conclusion. Now, Halsey put out his conclusion anyway in this live stream that Mark Snyder's video is cleaned up. But the draft report is not out. And my gut told me there was an additional reason besides just a software glitch. And I believe that when you read the Wayne Madsen report, that is what happened. But it could be in addition to a software glitch. But it is shocking. It is shocking.
Well, it could be that the software glitch was part of the other thing, okay?
It's possible they got hacked by the same Vert Walker, Bush family, crime family people.
Yep. Okay, thank you, Barbara. Appreciate that update because that's really critical. And we're hoping our next, if somebody can get a hold of Wayne Madsen, we hope that we can get him on the call next month to talk about this in more detail. That will be our project for the month. Those of us that are anybody who has access to Wayne is certainly welcome to invite him, but we'll try to do it if nobody else does. Okay.
Maybe we can identify someone because I don't really know him that well and I don't have his direct email.
I have his
email address.
Yeah,
okay.
Leo on our teleconference list is pretty good. He has pretty good contact with him, so I'm hoping he'll pick up the slack for us on that one. But if he doesn't, then we'll have to try to do it ourselves.
Okay
so
Ken, it's Craig. Could I just double check something with Barbara? The link in the draft agenda to the Halsey, it says Halsey trailer. It's only a couple minutes long. Is that the one you're saying that's
No, that's
better?
Not it. Maybe I sent the wrong one. I'll send it again.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a cleaned up video, much better that Mark Snyder did, of the actual live stream.
Right.
So I will resend. I'll check. I'm sorry. I'll double check and resend.
Barbara, I have a question.
Who's this? Who's speaking?
This is Peter Ketchum.
Oh, hi, Peter.
Barbara, it wasn't quite clear to me, because I'm very interested in reading about this. Are you saying that someone published an article documenting that Halsey's graduate students have been threatened?
Yes. It's been sent to the entire teleconference list earlier today. You should have my email with that link. If you don't,
I'm not. I'm not seeing anything here in my inbox.
Well, has anybody else seen it? Did you get it, Ken?
Yeah, I got it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was published.
Maybe you can forward that to Peter.
I'll do that, Peter. But Peter, when she's talking about the teleconference listserv, that's different from the teleconference mailing for the teleconference. Okay,
Okay.
To which you and everyone else is welcome to subscribe. All you got to do is just let me know you're interested, and we'll put you on it, okay?
Could you forward it to Peter?
Yeah, I'll do that. Okay. I'll be glad to do that.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so any other comments on Wayne's presentation or on the Halsey affair? Okay, well, hearing none, then we're open to...
So,
sorry.
Ken, let me make a closing comment.
Yes, go ahead, Wayne.
While it is not a surprise to the engineers who've been involved, the bombshell is that when you don't, and this is a one-liner, NIST assumed that the exterior columns were fixed and immovable in space.
Mm-hmm.
If you relax that and let them get pushed out, that releases the stress inside, rendering everything else they've done irrelevant.
It's a phrase.
To me, that's the takeaway, the big takeaway from this report for doing outreach. That's why I called it the bombshell revelation.
Yeah. I get that from you, but here's the problem. You understand it completely as a technical expert, or as someone with the expertise. For even people in the truth movement, it takes a fair amount of technical background to get what you're talking about. Even as simple as you've stated it, it still requires a certain amount of understanding of physics and structural engineering and so forth. What we need to do is somehow translate this into layman's language in a way that we can impart it, this just as you're saying, but to communicate it in a way that people wouldn't have to, read a few books to get what we're saying, okay?
Right. Did you start with magic column 79?
Well, I think that's useful. But again, the idea of the expansion, you see, is the key that Wayne's talking about, and somehow we've got to be able to articulate that in a very facile way. Okay, well,
that's
we're not able to do it. Okay.
Yeah. The problem with the magic column 79, I mean, glad to try to figure out how to work it, is that mm-hmm. then requires a whole lot more understanding of the collapse mechanism. And if you can't get across the concept of thermal expansion going in the opposite direction, relieving all the stresses, if you let the outside walls move 6 inches, if you can't get that across, you're not going to get anywhere with the column 79 map, because you can say, use the words. You can
I understand that, Wayne. It's just a way to open people's minds with a single meme and then give them the information.
Well,
it's not an either or.
Well, yeah,
agree.
Okay.
Yeah, no, it tastes great and it's much filling too. Okay. Sure. And, yep. Thank you again, Wayne, for this. What it suggests to me is that we're going to need at some point kind of an animation that shows these technical points in a way that a layman can comprehend it intuitively and immediately. You know, that's what probably will need to happen here, to take all of Wayne's breakdown here, but somehow be able to animate it in a more simplified way, but without losing any of the important particulars. Okay.
Well, I believe understanding is you're going to have a comparative animation coming up from Professor.
Well, that's true. But he's only going to show the collapse. Wayne is talking about the principle of the expansion, which is the other part of this. That's the bombshell.
Right.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. So let's open up for announcements. I know we have a few. I think we have a few in the works. And let's ask. Let's ask Chuck Smith if he's got anything to tell us. Chuck.
Oh, I'm sorry. Were you talking to me?
Yeah, did you want to talk about your plans for next month?
Oh, well, I've released onto YouTube a documentary that I made 4 years ago, 5 years ago, and it was just me venting, you know. I mean, I really had a lot of anger, I guess, in me. And so I decided to, I had discovered by going on to archive.org, I had discovered they had posted 9/11 video broadcasts from the BBC. And so I started downloading those, and I downloaded a whole lot of hours of all the broadcasts from ABC, CBS, and the BBC, and I think Fox. And I started going through these things, and I discovered that the Israelis were all over the BBC on the day of 9/11. They weren't in the United States at all. They were all over the BBC. And Ehud Barak was there all day long. He was on one show after another. And I started listening to these things, and I realized, I mean, they're on the job. I mean, here they are telling the United States what to do now. And they're busy describing what has to happen next. That's all they do. The empathy they have is cartoon-like. It's all about what has to happen now. And now, finally, the United States has the message it needs. And so I found video after video, and I went, oh, God, I got to do something with this. So it was disgusted me so much, and it reminded me of Nuremberg. So I kind of got a Nuremberg angle of this thing about how it's illegal because of Nuremberg and the Geneva Convention for all these acts that everybody's doing now, all the torture and killing and all that stuff. It's all illegal, and everybody's acting as if it was business as usual. I went, well, where does all this come from? I mean, I didn't grow up thinking that anybody in my government knowingly or if they got caught, they'd certainly pay a price, would behave this way. And it all just came together, right? We'd been infected by a different lifestyle and a different approach to the world, and our politicians have bought it hook, line, and sinker. So is our police. So anyway, I made this documentary. It's 3 hours long. And it kind of runs the gamut, showing just how corrupt we are, and that the Zionists are behind this thing because they're the ones who are doing all the talking. I mean, there was like if you looked at the 9/11 broadcasts, everybody in the country that was shown on television was only shown for just 20 seconds or something, Yasser Arafat or whatever, saying how sad they felt. And they were really crushed. But you listen to the Zionists who are all over the BBC, and they've got one agenda after another, and they're sure eager to talk about it. So anyway, it's in there, and I've released it onto YouTube. It's called 9/11 Rogue Agenda. And So it's there for people to watch, and I just thought you folks, out of anybody, would know why I made this and would appreciate, I think, the clips that are in it that maybe you've never seen.
And you will respond to Q&A and maybe make a short discussion of it for the next teleconference, right?
Well, if people watch it, I'd certainly be willing to respond in any way I can.
How many people would be interested in watching this film so that Chuck could talk to us about it next week?
I vote yes.
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 Yes. Okay. There's interest here, Chuck, to be sure. Okay.
Okay, well, I'm not a professional like you guys, so I'll just wing it. Well,
yes, you are. You're a professional in a different kind of way. It's equally important, so don't worry about it, man. We just appreciate
it. Professional communicator like you guys,
yeah.
But I'm not as long, I'd rather put it in film than I could write
right.
it, but I can't take my time to sit around and write my day, so I'll just wing
no,
it.
No, no, no. So we'll try to watch it between now and then. We'll put out the on our listserv the link again and ask people to take a look at it and then hopefully be able to discuss it with you on the next teleconference. Okay, we'll set time for that.
There's two versions of it up there. There's the full 3-hour version, and then I had broken it up into three parts at one point. So either one of them works.
Great. Okay, so no excuse if you don't have enough time. You can do the short one. If you have the time, you can look at the more detailed one. Okay, and so we should be.
It's not the short one. It's actually in three parts because of you.
Oh, three parts. I see.
But now I put it together as one part, 1 3-hour movie.
Okay,
that's the best one.
I see. Okay. All right, and so any other announcements? Yeah, Wayne, go ahead.
Yeah, on the next teleconference, I'm going to be doing my my third and last presentation about the Pentagon this year, and it's going to answer some of Craig's questions. It's going to talk about some of the recent analysis I've done that's going to address the wire spools issues that have befuddled many people. So I'll be including that. Over.
Well, just to be on the safe side here, Wayne, I think it seems to me that you requested of the teleconference that you did this on answering Craig's question. So you might want to ask that you amend your proposal at this time. Make sure that nobody objects, okay?
Well, there's actually a number of things that are going to be addressed. One of the things was going to be addressing Craig's questions, which was where was the engine? How did the plane get level? So it's all about the plane approach and impact. So it's all related. If you want me to make
but we're still talking about a 15-minute presentation, right?
That's right.
Okay. So does anybody have any objection to this? Additional material, as long as it's still kept to 15 minutes.
I have an objection because I think, didn't we say that nobody should be on more than three times in a year?
No. We agreed that Wayne could do it this third time or this fourth time.
Okay, but that's going to be the fifth time.
No, you don't understand. Nita, we agreed last call that Wayne could do this in October. That's already a done deal. It's just a question of the topic now, okay? That's all we're talking about. And so
he did it today. Wasn't today his presentation?
This was not on the Pentagon. This is his first presentation on Halsey, believe me.
Just to be clear, it seems to me that
we should be hearing about from a variety of people, not just the same person over and over.
I'm sorry. No, that's out of order, Nita. We've already agreed as a teleconference that Wayne can do this next month. The question only now is whether anybody objects.
I put in an objection last time, but I couldn't get in.
Nita, you don't understand. It's not about whether anybody objects to Wayne making his presentation. It's about whether anybody objects to him adding a couple of other topics to what he declared he was going to be including in his 15 minutes. That's all. We're only looking at that, okay? It's already been agreed that he can do it in October, okay?
Ken, let me make a clarification here. The motion the thing that passed, was that I could not talk or that no single person could talk about the same topic more than three times in a year. And the next month will be the third topic on the Pentagon, which is acceptable. Tonight was about the World Trade Center Tower because I've actually given papers on this at Virginia Tech on this particular issue and other places talking about this. I'm familiar with the issue. So this is a different topic. I would not have.
I already said that. This has nothing to do with what your topic tonight had nothing to do with any of this other stuff. Okay, it was a totally different deal. We all agree on that. Okay, so that's not an issue. Okay.
Good.
Okay. So can we please move forward? If nobody has an objection, then he can add these other
deals to his presentation next month, which will be a 15-minute presentation with Q&A, okay? So hearing no objections, we'll move forward. And any other announcements for next month?
This is Dwayne.
Who has the word on censorship and cognitive infiltration? Is someone going to make a comment about that?
I don't understand.
In the announcements and then part V, any available updates on issues? And then
that's if there's available time. We're already way over time here.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you.
Never mind.
Thank you. Yeah, no, but anytime you want to, especially if you have something to do with it, in particular, Dwayne, if you would like to make a presentation, just let us know ahead of time. We'll reserve time for you, okay?
Yeah.
Okay. And anything else? Any other announcements?
This is Dwayne. Do you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead, Dwayne.
Two announcements. One having to do with the consensus panel. I happen to be talking to Elizabeth Woodworth on this. Some statistics from the website. They have 1,200 website visits per day on average. Mm-hmm. And the panel has 4,600 followers.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's pretty good, I think. The other has to do with a TAP meeting. Bill Jacoby will be in the Los Angeles area, actually in Santa Monica on the 7th, which is a Saturday, the afternoon of the 7th. And the topic that he has for his talk is truth as the unifying theme in an alliance for America.
Wow. Interesting. Okay. And do you know when that's going to be?
Yeah, the 7th of October.
Okay. Thank you.
And Barb, I have an announcement. Barb?
Thank you. Dwayne, go ahead, Barb. Okay.
Okay. A couple of things. Just want to remind everybody, I will be sending, hopefully within the week, the link to the really great video of the entire event in New York City. So the whole purpose of this is to raise funds. Well, of course, to have the event itself and to educate people on YouTube, as well as at the physical event. But it's really to raise funds for the Lawyers Committee for 9/11 Inquiry and why that is so important right now. So when you get it, please forward it to all of your lists and ask for donations to their website. They can donate at the Lawyers Committee website, which you will see in the video. And the reason is that I'm on the grand jury petition drafting and research committee for the Lawyers Committee on 9/11 Inquiry. And we are moving forward, probably within 2 weeks max, maybe three at the outside, we will have the official grand jury petition with a whole slew of legally perfect evidentiary exhibits. And it will be presented to the U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of New York. So Mick Harrison, of course, is the fantastic Director of Litigation for the Lawyers Committee for 9/11 Inquiry, and he needs to have breakfast, lunch, and dinner and pay his rent. So while he's doing this incredibly important work, he's the lead author, but he's being really great at getting feedback not only from the official Lawyers Committee grand jury petition committee that I'm a member of, but also from 9/11 activists. For instance, Nick, out on his own nickel, he went to New York City, and he met with the New York, New Jersey area 9/11 Truth Group, a couple of weeks ago, two and a half weeks ago, got their input. So he's very serious about input. This is going to be a very, very important document, and we're very serious about bringing the real perpetrators to justice, but we need the funds. So that's the purpose of this professional video, and you should have it within a week.
Okay, thank you, Barbara. Any other? Bill, go ahead. Bill, go ahead.
There's Christopher Bolin is swinging around in the Boston area in the last week in October, and the Nation of Islam is going to do something with him in one of the larger mosques around here.
Oh boy.
And you know, aside from just showing up there and you know, supporting that way, if you would like to hand out flyers, the dates and stuff are not fixed, and he's kind of chary with those, so he doesn't get, you know, the sit-in doesn't happen before he gets to speak. But that's upcoming, and I just, the whole idea of the Nation of Islam participating in this is just great, I think. Mm.
Just okay.
Get in touch with me if you have any questions.
And okay. Who is that speaking? Who is speaking?
Bill Wells.
Christopher Bolin?
No, who are you? Who is speaking?
I am Bill Wilt.
Oh, Bill Wilt. I just couldn't hear. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. Thank you, Bill. Any other announcements?
This is Bart. Just making a quick comment on that same thing. This was streamed live. Hamouk had a camera there, so it was discussed during the Q&A period when Nation of Islam people got to the mic, and so this has been heard outside, but in general people are trying to be careful about announcing where Christopher is going to be when. But this will be at the Nation of Islam Mosque, I think, in the West Roxbury area, and it's their place, and so no one's going to be pushing them to not have Christopher Bolin.
Right.
Or if they do, they're not going to get very far.
Do you have a date on that, a specific date?
It's not. Haven't heard any date yet. I spoke to Mook a couple of days ago. He's in California helping a friend paint his house or something.
Okay.
Nothing's known yet. I was the other camera there in Watertown, so I'm close to this, and presumably I'll be with it again. So.
Can you alert us? Can you alert us to the 9/11 teleconference email list when you know the details?
Yeah, sure. I'll be glad
to.
But there's no, there's nothing yet that I'm aware of. So.
Right, when you know. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. And Ken, you could add me to the listserv, please.
Is this, who's asking, Bill?
Wilt, yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Peter Ketchum needs to be added.
Peter, would you like to be added as well?
Yeah, please add me.
No problem. Okay, Bill and Peter then. Okay. Any other announcements before we close?
Yeah, this is Cheryl. I have a quick one. Michael Springman is going to be speaking in West Hartford at the University of Hartford on October 18th.
Great.
Okay.
Thanks, everybody.
For those who don't know, who is Michael Springman? What is his?
He wrote the book Visas for Al-Qaeda, and then the latest one on weaponized migration. Hello.
Okay.
Something goodbye Europe or something like that.
Right. Mm-hmm. Good deal. Okay. And I guess that's it then. So we're done for the evening, and we'll see you all the last Wednesday in October.
October.
Thank you.
Bye.
Good night.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.